Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the hour here on Sports Radio 610. You mentioned Geno Smith a little bit earlier, Seth, being the front runner for the comeback player of the year. And yeah, we were wondering, okay, what exactly is he coming back from? His own ineptitude throughout the course of his career? Yes.
And being on bad teams, too.
Being on bad teams. But nothing like, no strife that I know of in his personal life. Although he did get punched in the face by a teammate like 7 years ago. Maybe that's what it is. He's coming back from the punch from IK Enkapali, his teammate.
I always felt that Geno Smith got too much of the blame for that. People acted like Geno Smith wasn't. I remember wasn't part of the story him throwing money down at the guy's feet, the guy that owed him.
I don't remember.
I was mad because Geno Smith had no-showed his camp.
Yeah.
And did Geno throw money at him?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
If he did that, then that's something that gets you punched.
Yes.
Like, yeah, you should be a better leader of men than that. I saw that. That happened with a couple Texans players once where a player threw money at a guy's feet, and the guy who had the money thrown at responded ferociously.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Boy.
Okay, so them's fighting words, basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's pretty degrading, you know, because you gotta stoop over to pick that money up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a little bit like saying, like, here, you know,
yeah,
you're not worth my time. This means nothing to me. Pick this up.
It's something a wrestling heel would do. If you're doing something a wrestling heel would do, you deserve to get punched in the face. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I bring up Geno Smith because Seth had brought up comeback player of the year possibilities for him. This is Justin Verlander is how you win comeback player of the year. And Justin Verlander was named comeback player of the year yesterday for the American League. Justin Verlander had Tommy John surgery. Justin Verlander went through a grueling rehab of his elbow. Justin Verlander came back and won the Cy Young Award with numbers that we haven't seen in decades for a starting pitcher in certain metrics. Congratulations, Justin Verlander. If you are no longer going to be a Houston Astro, you went out in fine fashion. A unanimous Cy Young and a Comeback Player of the Year award.
Oh, he actually did win the Comeback
Player. He won it yesterday,
Seth.
Okay, yes.
I got you.
Yep, that's why I'm talking
about. Well, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry would be the... Derrick Henry is in third place for Comeback Player of the Year. I feel like he's the rightful one. Geno Smith and Saquon Barkley, if they have their career best performance... That's not, and they haven't ever been great before that, then that's not really a comeback. That's just a late bloomer award. That's like the guy, that's a growth spurt at the age of 19 type award. The guy that Derrick Henry, who had an injury and has been awesome before, would be the comeback player of the year. These people are all frauds making these odds and voting on these things.
I like where your head's at on this. So to come back, you actually have to have a threshold of achievement to come back to in the first place.
Been somewhere to come back to.
I like that. I've never thought about that before. That's good.
It's like that'd be like having your homecoming, 30 miles away from wherever the hell you grew up.
Right.
It's not your homecoming.
Yeah.
That's your going to-ing.
Yep. Exactly. That's what I've been saying.
Everybody knows that.
Bregman got some votes for comeback player of the year.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
he did.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
Well, there's
Bregman,
a guy that was an MVP. You know, runner-up for the MVP a few years back.
That's right.
Was he second or third place?
He was second. He was runner-up in 2019. I'm guessing Trout won it. Trout, by the way, got some votes as well for comeback player of the year.
Plus, the Angels also ended up acquiring Hunter Renfro, the baseball player, who looks exactly like Mike Trout. They're like, he looks exactly like, yeah. Yeah, there's going to be two Mike Trouts on the Angels right now, unless the new owners ship Mike Trout off.
The real Mike Trout and Ratchet Mike Trout.
Yeah. Hunter Renfro. You're like, woo, Hunter Renfro was, he's not quite what we thought. The football player wasn't quite what everybody was.
He got paid, though. Boy,
yeah,
he got paid.
Yeah.
He got paid, yeah.
So Hunter Renfro with an E, the baseball player, is he's going to be with the Angels. He looks exactly like Mike Trout, the baseball player.
You have a couple former teammates that made their way onto the semifinalist list for the Pro Football Hall of Fame yesterday. 28 semifinalists named for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Andre Johnson, to nobody's surprise, is on that list. He made it to the finalists last year. Fred Taylor. Fred Taylor, Fred Taylor is the leading rusher career yard-wise who is not in the Hall of Fame.
And yes.
That's eligible. Like Frank Gore is third. He's not eligible yet. Adrian Peterson, not eligible yet. They're both ahead of Fred Taylor. I want to say Fred Taylor's like 17th or 18th on the all-time rushing list? Something like that?
Fred Taylor's 17th.
17th, okay.
Ahead of Steven Jackson, John Riggins, and Corey Dillon.
Okay.
See, that's where it gets a little bit interesting, right around there. He's kind of like the line of demarcation right there.
You're his former teammate. Make the case for Fred Taylor, Hall of Famer.
Fred Taylor is the classic example of a guy who had the misfortune of playing on an expansion team and then not winning a Super Bowl. And a lot of his very best play was early in his career. And then he ended up compiling a lot of stats, which I think people use against him, unfortunately, when in fact, like if you compare him to a guy like Terrell Davis, who was on a couple of awesome teams with the Broncos. I don't think, look, I think Fred Taylor was a more explosive and better running back in that same era than Terrell Davis was. He just didn't happen to be on the same team. But there were games like, I was on a team that went 14-2 with Fred Taylor. And in that like 3 or 4 year period, there were multiple games that I don't think we would have won if it weren't for like, not just a Fred Taylor effort or performance, but a Fred Taylor 80-yard touchdown run where he outran every DB on the field.
Yeah, Hall of Fame level play.
Yeah, he was just so unbelievably explosive and fast and had such an ability to turn bad blocking into a home run run that I feel if he had played in a major market and not even won a Super Bowl or anything, if he had just played in a larger market, it would be a slam dunk. You compare to the fact that people debate Eli Manning compared to Fred Taylor, it sickens me, Sean. Fred Taylor was twice the football player that Eli Manning
was.
Sickens me!
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to handle the Eli Manning Hall of Fame candidacy when it comes up. It's coming up soon. I mean, he's been retired a few years now, so it's coming up soon. So we'll see what happens. This is a pretty stacked list of first-timers on the ballot this year for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Joe Thomas, who I think is a lock.
Yeah.
Darrell Revis, who I think is a lock. Like when I say lock, I mean lock to get in next summer, like first ballot Hall of Famers. And then James Harrison, Jari Evans, who has he's an interior offensive lineman, so it's not sexy, but man, his resume really pops. And Dwight Freeney, who was one of the best edge rushers of this generation. That's a pretty stacked quintet of first-timers on the ballot.
Yeah. In my mind, I thought DeMarcus Ware already made it. So
did McClain. Well, McClain knew he didn't make it, but this is what McClain said, because McClain and I on the Utopia podcast kind of broke down some of the names on this list, and we talked a lot about Andre Johnson's chances, and McClain was shocked that DeMarcus Ware didn't make it last year.
Really?
Yeah. So I think you can pencil DeMarcus. Like, if your concern is Andre Johnson going to get in to Canton next summer, there's five guys that get in from the modern era. Just know that Joe Thomas is already penciled in for one. Darrell Revis is penciled in for the second one. And John McClain, who has his finger on the pulse of this stuff pretty good because he's on the committee, he thinks DeMarcus Ware is going to get another one because he was shocked he didn't get in last year. So you're down to two spots for Andre to get in. And if you're looking at receivers, I think Andre's better than all the other receivers who made the semifinalist list, both in accolades and in actual eye test. Reggie Wayne, Torrey Holt, Steve Smith, Henry Ellard, Anquan Boldin.
You know, the name on here that intrigues me And this is his first year eligible, which surprised me, but he ended up playing those last few years, was James Harrison.
Yeah.
Because he was a defensive player of the year. He had a five-year stretch where he went to five Pro Bowls and he was all pro twice.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, his counting stats, he's got 84.5 sacks. That's not a huge number, you know, for guys by Hall of Fame standards. But he was a Pittsburgh Steeler, and he was just so – he was just the epitome of everything, like, most people want their linebackers to be. And outside linebackers in a 3-4 especially, he was just a scary human being, like, in the sport that – We used to be allowed to glorify scary human beings in this sport. I feel like he should be the last guy who makes it into the Hall of Fame specifically because he just scared the crap out of people.
He was the heartbeat of an entire era of Steeler defense, I think. You know what I mean? Like he was the pulse of that defense for the better part of a decade, and it's a defense that went to multiple Super Bowls. And he had an iconic play in a Super Bowl. He had that 100-yard interception return against the Cardinals in 2008 right before the half that completely swung that game.
Yeah, in a game that, you know, you could argue that if it weren't for that and some help from the officiating, that the Steelers don't win that game.
Absolutely.
So that's the pivotal play in that game.
Yes.
He's also the classic guy who outplayed his measurables, like all of whatever his 40 time and anything that people thought of him coming out of college because he was undrafted.
Yep.
He was, I don't think he's a first ballot, but I think he ends up making it.
Yeah, no, not first ballot for sure, but he's an iconic player, no doubt. Hey, we're getting you ready for Texans and Dolphins. Sunday afternoon, Texans countdown gets going at 9 o'clock, presented by Modelo, kickoff at noon, and then Texans postgame right thereafter, taking you up to Sunday Night Football here on Sports Radio 610. So keep it tuned right here on Sunday for your NFL football.
I don't usually like Hall of Fame debates. There's a lot of players that deserve to be in the Hall of Fame right now that are just log jammed.
I mean, like
Steve Smith Sr. is a big, like, that's a very good debate right there. Boy, there's a lot of guys on there on this name, and there's more coming.
Yeah, yeah. No, if Andre Johnson gets in with this group of semifinalists, that's accomplishing something, man.
Hall of Fame might have to let its belt out a little bit here in the next few years and allow some more in.
Big weekend of college football. By the way, Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the hour, so we'll talk to the Texans GM about the season at the bottom of the hour. Speaking of the season, the Texans are definitely going to be picking high in the draft, perhaps twice. This weekend is an awesome weekend of college football. The college football schedule through the prism of scouting the Texans draft. We'll get you ready for this weekend next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Nick Caserio joins us at the bottom of the hour. I guess just spending a few minutes here going through the weekend college football schedule through the prism of a Texan fan. Who are some guys that the Texans could be looking at, should be looking at with their high draft capital? There's actually a few games on Friday that I think should be interesting, and they're all slotted at different day parts Baylor at UT in the morning, you get a chance to watch running back Bijan Robinson, who I know Landry Locker is a big advocate of. And I wouldn't mind having a running back to pair with Damian Pierce moving forward. That would be an explosive backfield. 2:30 Friday, NC State at number 17, North Carolina. This is more for next year, the 24 draft. But Drake May, their quarterback, is going to be one of the top quarterbacks in the draft two seasons from now. So if the Texans choose not to go with a quarterback in this draft, Drake May of North Carolina. And then the night game, another quarterback who had a lot of buzz at the beginning of the year and is probably viewed more as a project right now, but I would expect he's coming out. Anthony Richardson of Florida goes into Tallahassee to try to upset number 16 FSU. That's at 6:30. So you have a triple header of Texans draft watching on Friday. So that's Friday. Saturday, the morning is stacked. I've got three TVs, and they're all going to have these three games on. Saturday, 11 a.m., Georgia Tech at number one, Georgia. You got a ton of guys on Georgia on defense that the Texans should be looking at. Defensive tackle Jalen Carter probably immediately become the best defensive lineman on this team. Cornerback Kaylee Ringo is also a potential first-round pick. He can never have too many cornerbacks. The big game on Saturday early is number three Michigan at number two Ohio State. C.J. Stroud. If you want to watch C.J. Stroud go against the top five team, you get a chance to do it Saturday morning. So get up early out of your two-day meat coma and watch potential Texans quarterback C.J. Stroud. The other early game, Saturday, 11 a.m., South Carolina at number eight Clemson. Clemson has two defensive linemen to keep an eye on. Miles Murphy, an edge rusher, and Brian Breese, their defensive tackle. South Carolina has Cam Smith, a cornerback. So there you go. Those are the early games. And then the midday games, you got a bunch of those too, including Alabama and Auburn in the Iron Bowl. Bryce Young. So you get a chance on Saturday to watch C.J. Stroud early, Bryce Young in the midday, and a bunch of other guys at night. You get a chance to watch Caleb Williams at night. He's a 2024 quarterback. So if you're, you know, if the Texans pass on a quarterback this year, Caleb Williams might be the first pick in 2024, Notre Dame and USC on Saturday night. So, but among the names, Saturday, Auburn and Alabama, Bryce Young. Of course, Will Anderson, who is potentially a top three pick in the draft. And many, many others on Alabama. This just in, Alabama, even though they're number seven in the country, still really, really good. Other games of note on Saturday, watching through the prism of a Texans fan looking at the draft. Oh, Iowa State at number four, TCU. Wide receiver Quentin Johnson. I wouldn't mind. I did one of those mock draft simulations last night. That's how I spend a Tuesday night on a holiday week. And I did some maneuvering as the mock GM of the Texans. I came away with Bryce Young, Quentin Johnson, and Bijan Robinson. I was amazing in this mock draft simulation that I was doing. So Quentin Johnson, 3 o'clock. LSU and A&M is 6 o'clock on Saturday night. A&M trying to avoid a 4-8 season. But among names, Kayshon Boutte, the LSU wide receiver, is a name to watch in that game. And then I mentioned Notre Dame and USC. There's a bunch of guys in this game that are interesting to me. Partially because I'm a Notre Dame homer. But tight end Michael Mayer is going to be a first-round pick. Notre Dame's got an edge rusher named Isaiah Foskey, who's going to be a first-round pick. And then USC's got a wide receiver, Jordan Addison, who is going to be a first-round pick as well. And then, of course, I mentioned Caleb Williams, class of 24 quarterback. Last one, 6:30, Oklahoma at Texas Tech. Tyree Wilson, the edge rusher from Texas Tech, who, my God, he is a beast. He just announced yesterday he is entering the NFL draft. He would be a perfect pick for this team with that Cleveland Browns pick at 7 through 13, wherever it is.
Yes, that was the one encouraging thing about this team right now, the Texans, is that they have I say encouraging. I don't know what that means ultimately. They have improved on their pass rush a little bit over the last couple of weeks. The problem is that it's Jerry Hughes, it's Malik Collins will be here for a couple of years, and it's Okoronkwo, who's not, I keep thinking of him as an old guy because he's got a distinct name and he was playing for the Rams, so you noticed him before, but he's still relatively young. I think if you added a stud pass rusher to that mix next year, and rookies tend to come in and actually perform pretty quickly. That could end up being something that sparks a more immediate change than a lot of us feel like is possible right now.
All right, Nick Caserio joins us here at the bottom of the hour. We will get into all the topics Texan related with Texans GM Nick Caserio, leading off with Davis Mills next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters.
All right, welcome back. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. As the music plays, that can only mean one thing, as we are on the cusp of a Thanksgiving weekend. We get a chance to check in with Texans general manager Nick Caserio joining us here on Payne and Pendergast. Nick, good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. How you doing?
Morning, fellas. Happy Thanksgiving. Good to be here. Feels like it's been a little while here, but always good to visit with you. Preemptively, I might as well get ahead of this before we get to, you know, like, what are you going to eat for Thanksgiving? So I don't want to, like, burst anybody's bubble here, but, like, don't ask me about eating pie or stuffing or anything like that. What's my food of choice on Thanksgiving? So I think the city of Houston just exploded. Probably Seth did for sure, but hopefully we're not going to have a big discussion about, you know, what I'm eating on Thanksgiving.
Oh, God, no. I honestly, food takes are my least favorite takes in
all
general.
Right,
like anybody acting like one food is superior to another and that you shouldn't like it, that food because of whatever.
Or you have to eat it just because.
Yeah. I get eat whatever you want on Thanksgiving. If you like saltine crackers with marmalade, then so be it. That's your Thanksgiving dinner.
I love that that's the topic you're cutting off at the knees right at the outset, Nick. Like, listen, my Thanksgiving plate is off limits. I'm not talking about it.
I'm sure we've got plenty of other things to talk about. So
Absolutely. Well, we always appreciate your time, Nick. And we'll get into some of the bigger picture stuff in a second. But the big topic this week has been Davis Mills, and Lovey kind of alluded to it on Monday that there might be some changes afoot. We've not heard anything yet, so we'll ask you, do you anticipate a change at the quarterback position this week?
Yeah, I think each week everything is kind of fluid. Take the information from the game and then just try to go through and then just meet collectively as a staff and ultimately do what we feel is in the best interest of the team. If we feel there's merit making some type of change, then we'll go ahead and do it. If we don't, then you know we'll go ahead and continue moving forward. I'd say just overall as a team, I think just collectively, I mean, this is related, but big picture, I think everybody, we all need to be better, and I think that starts with myself. I mean, ultimately, we all have to take responsibility and be accountable for where we are. We've earned where we are, which is not very good. It's not good enough. We have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of things in front of us. I think, you know, one change isn't necessarily going to be the ultimate elixir, but I think we just have to be honest with ourselves, make a true assessment about where we are, and then try to make a decision. And each day, try to make the right decision and good decisions for the team, and ultimately put ourselves in the position on Sunday where we can go out there and execute and, you know, play good football, which I'd say at times we've been able to do that. We just haven't been able to do it on a consistent enough basis, and ultimately that's why we're in the position that we're in. So if there's something that we feel merits consideration of doing differently, then we'll go ahead and do it.
You know, Nick, I'm not going to hot take you to death on this or anything. I think that a lot of the fans, a lot of people in media, and you yourself probably anticipated adversity this season, but hoped for progression out of certain guys and certain players. And with Davis Mills, I think where I'm a little bit frustrated is it doesn't seem like he has that same either aggressiveness or willingness to pull the trigger, even though he throws the ball pretty effectively at times downfield. I just don't feel like he's attacking downfield as much as I expected him to. Is that something where he's taking a step back? Is it a matter of opportunities and guys that he's working with? Where is that coming from?
Yeah, Seth, I think that's a fair question. I think you have to look at everything in totality. You know, there's been opportunities where we've been able to do some things offensively, and I think Davis would admit this as well. I mean, he's done some things that have been decent. There's other things, you know, quite frankly, he hasn't done as well. So the most important quality that a quarterback has to take care of or do is take care of the football. And, you know, admittedly, self-admittedly, or just overall, that hasn't necessarily been the case. I mean, any time that you put your team in a position early on in a game, when you give the defense a chance to score, it just puts the whole team behind the eight ball here a little bit. So I think there's been moments, and I think he's probably a microcosm of, I'd say, the team. Like, there's been some good things. Overall, there hasn't been enough of them collectively, so there's been too much inconsistency, which has kind of led to the result. But Davis is a smart kid. He works hard. He has good physical attributes. He's played a lot of football. I mean, I think he started 21 games over the last 2 years, whatever it's been. So, and the other thing I would say is, and this is just generally speaking, quarterback's the hardest position to play in sports. I mean, we can have a discussion about that. I'm sure the analytics people can, you know, have their, there's some, you probably can go to town on that one there. But playing that position is as hard as playing any position in sports for the amount of things that you have to do, the amount of things that you have to handle, what you have to understand. It's interesting. Just watching a little bit of I didn't see the whole game, but the San Francisco-Arizona game, you know, Monday night. And I think McCoy was getting rid of the ball in less than 2 seconds. So you think about the number of things that happen in a 2 second span, it's a lot. So, by the time you get in the huddle, you call the play, you come to the line of scrimmage, make sure that you have an understanding of the assignment, what you're doing. And the big part of playing quarterback, too, is understanding where are your problems. Before the ball is even snapped, where are your problems? And maybe they give you a different look, or maybe they do a little bit something different that maybe you hadn't practiced or you hadn't anticipated. And as a team, can you react and adjust to some of the things that you're seeing? So I'd say that position, every player is going to be different. I'd say there's some people have success early. Some people it takes a little bit longer. I would say, just looking at the quarterback that we played the other day, Taylor Heinicke, like, there's a good example of a guy. Talk about, I would say, adversity, stick-to-itiveness, having enough mental toughness to endure, I would say, some ups and downs. Here's a guy basically was out of football, you know, 5-6 different teams. He was actually here in Houston for a period of time. We actually had him in New England on the practice squad as well. So that position, there's so many factors, so many things, and it's not necessarily about that one individual. It's about everybody else around him. So I would say, from Davis's perspective, there's been some things that he's done okay, and there's been some other things, quite frankly, that he would probably want to have back, whether it's the throw either early on in a game there the other day, going back to the Giants game, you know, have the ball in a red area. We have a second and long, third and long, whatever it was. We're in scoring zone, and we have 3 points, but then we turn the ball over. And then even if you go back to, I want to say it was the Chicago game, where we have the ball inside the 5-yard line, you know, we try to stuff it in there, and it was tight coverage, and they end up, you know, picking the ball off and going the other way. So I think the most important thing for a quarterback or any player in general is just to learn from those mistakes, learn from those situations, understand the why behind it, and try to just make sure that you've correct it at some point. And it takes – look, there's a lot of things that go into playing a quarterback position. There's a lot of work that goes into it. So, you know, I think Davis has a bright future. He's done some good things at different points. Again, overall, I think he's a microcosm of probably where we are as a team.
So, you know, sticking with that theme of quarterbacks improving over time, Tua Tagovailoa is a different quarterback this year than he was last year. What, aside from a change in coach and the addition of Tyreek Hill, what do you see out of him that perhaps you didn't see last year?
Yeah, no, Tua's done a really good job. I mean, you know, we could certainly talk about the Dolphins a little bit as a team. They're playing really good football. But I would say overall he's been on the field. He's been available. He's been healthy. I know he missed like the two or three games in there, and then Teddy had to play, and then Skylar Thompson had to play, so they went through a little bit of a rough patch there. So I think each team's going to face some level of adversity, but relative to Tua, even going back when you watch him at Alabama, he was a very accurate thrower. So he was an accurate thrower, got rid of the football, had an understanding of where to go with the football, and he had a lot of good skill players around him. I mean, Waddle, I mean, coincidentally, you know, with Waddle, I mean, there's a number of different receivers, Devontae Smith, you know, Henry Ruggs. I mean, there's been a number of good players, good skill players there, and I think he's settled in here a little bit. I mean, Mike's done a good job offensively. Their offensive staff has done a good job of kind of maybe taking some of the things that they did in San Francisco. I mean, it's kind of interesting, you know, when you look at Miami and you look at the league, not too many teams use 21 personnel. Like, we use some 21 personnel. Miami uses 21 personnel. Ingold's on the field, I want to say 40% of the time, whatever it is. But the way they use Ingold, it's pretty interesting. I mean, he's in the backfield. He's on the line of scrimmage and tight end. So, different but similar to, I would say, what Kyle does with Juszczyk, you know, in San Francisco. But anyways, what Tua's done, Tua's made a lot of good decisions. He's taken care of the football. He's been accurate with the ball. And they have two really good receivers who are explosive players. And the two running backs that they have on the team, Mostert's been there. And then they traded for Jeff Wilson. So I think they've done some things offensively. And Mike's done a really good job of kind of setting things up. They put a lot of stress on the defense. And quite frankly, it's helped a quarterback and helped Tua. Tua was a good player coming out. He had some injury issues that he kind of had to deal with. And he kind of got off to a slow start here a little bit. But here we are. What's this, year three or whatever it is? So. And he's kind of settled in, so, and they've made some progress. So sometimes it takes a little bit longer. And he was, what, the fifth pick in a draft or whatever mm-hmm. the hell he was? So, again, I think there's always propensity to think, okay, immediately you pick this guy here. Okay, he's going to come in, and he's going to be the ultimate elixir for all your ills, franchise, and offense. That's not how it works. The most important thing is putting together a good team with the right scheme, with the right coach, and then being able to go out there and execute it. And look, the margin of error in this league is very small. I mean, you guys watch a lot of football. You guys are both smart guys. You kind of see what's going on league-wide. When you look at what happens, I want to say going into week 10 or whatever it was, there were as many one-score games this year than there has been like almost in the history of the NFL. So the margin of error between winning and losing in this league is minuscule. And then even if you go back and look at the Giants, you know, who was a good team, who we played, I think their margin of victory was going into last week was 14 points, and then they ended up losing the Lions, so I think their margin of victory is like zero. So, I mean, look, there's so many factors that go into being a good team. Sometimes it happens quicker than others. I think we're in this instant gratification societally, kind of how we view things. Sometimes it takes a little bit more work. It takes a little bit more time. And quite frankly, you have to go through a little bit of adversity. But the people that go through adversity have enough, I would say, this league is more about mental toughness than it is physical toughness. So you have to have some mental toughness to understand you're going to endure and withstand some tough times. So, I mean, look, we're going to have to work our ass off and work through it, and there's no quick fix. And I think if you have the right mindset and the right mentality, which I would say there are enough people in this building and enough players on this team that have that mindset, at some point it's going to maybe turn and go the way that you want. I don't know when that's going to happen. I don't know when that's going to be. I don't have a crystal ball. That's all we can do is focus on this week, focus on what we have in front of us, and then just try to make incremental improvements each week, each day, and then hopefully that leads to more tangible success on the field.
Nick Caserio, Texans general manager, joining us here on Sports Radio 16. Nick, along those lines, are you, if I'm framing this the wrong way, then tell me, but it seemed like right around the trade deadline midseason, you know, reportedly Kamu Grugier-Hill wanted out. He came to you to ask for his release. And I know Brandon, you know, there was the Brandon Cooks trade deadline rumor swirling and things like that. Are you discouraged at all that guys that seemed to be like culture setters for the team seem to get a little sideways there?
Yeah, I would say it's a fairly – everything is nuanced, and I would just say, generally speaking, this is an indictment against you or Seth or anybody else. Mm-hmm. But I would say I think we all have to be careful of believing everything that what some reporter says, well, here's what Nick said or here's what's going on. Until you really have all the facts, I think it's hard to make an assessment about like what the situation actually is. I would say in those particular situations, quite frankly, Sean, I think there's been some mischaracterization, but that's okay. That's the world in which we live. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's the way it is. So I would say it's each situation is different. Each player is a little bit different. We try to figure out the best way to handle that situation, and ultimately whatever the end result is the end result. So, I mean, I would say speaking to KG, have a lot of respect for KG, did a lot of good things for our team. He's been a good player in this league for a long time. In the end, like we felt like the best thing was for us to just kind of part ways. I would say what's reported and what's said about how we ended up at that point, quite frankly, I think is inaccurate. But, I mean, that's okay. That comes with the territory. So I think that's just the day and age in which we live. So the reality is, I mean, look, things aren't going maybe as well as everybody would have hoped. We have to look at each situation individually. Each player, each case is a little bit different. Ultimately, we have to do what we feel is in the best interest for the team and try to handle things as best we can internally, directly, one-on-one, and communicate that. And whatever the feelings are, I mean, it's best to kind of keep that between the respective parties and respective individuals, understanding that you all have a job to do. You do it very well, but I think some people, quite frankly, don't do it as well as maybe the perception is. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
I think with, you know, with Brandon Cooks, though, there was, okay, I know cryptic tweets are cryptic tweets, and it's you can't say exactly what anybody means by it, but you know, when he came back into the fold, he said that he declined to answer what he thought, you know, Nick Caserio's culture was or the goal was for your culture. And I thought it was clear enough there without any, you know, reported details or anything about what might be going on. It seemed like there was some disconnect there. Is that something that you've been able to work through with Brandon in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to Brandon, you know, at different points. Lovey's talked to Brandon. So Brandon's a professional. I think the reality is, and I don't want to speak for Brandon, but I would just say, generally speaking, most players, in the end, they want to win. I mean, ultimately, that's what we want to do. We want to go out there, we want to have an opportunity to win and play good football. And, you know, in Brandon's situation, I mean, he's been in some good programs. He's been around, you know, a number of good teams. And I think his hope, and we're all hope that, you know, we would be further along than we are. But I mean, the reality is that we are where we are. And I think how people express themselves, I mean, quite frankly, I mean, everybody has a choice to make with which how they express themselves and, you know, respect that position. I think the best way to handle those situations is kind of handle them internally and talk one-on-one. So I think sometimes all of us, and not players, emotion sometimes leads to, I would say, decisions that maybe you look back on and go, you know what, maybe I could have handled that a little bit differently. So have a lot of respect for Brandon. Brandon's going to been a good player in this league for a number of years. You know, so I think we move forward here. So kind of take it one day at a time. You know, Brandon Sears worked hard. He's got a good attitude. So, you know, I think we're just moving forward.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us here on Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. Nick, some of the rookies. I'll start with Damian Pierce, who's been a revelation and a joy to watch. Obviously, are you concerned at all about the amount of work, the workload that he's getting, that he's on pace for about 300 carries right now?
Maybe they can ship some of those carries to me, take the load off of him.
There you go.
No, I wasn't a very good running quarterback, so no one would want to see that. You know, it's an interesting question. We've actually talked to not just DP, but the rookies about this. So we're at a period of time here. So we played 10 games. We have 7 remaining. So when you look at kind of making that transition from college to pros, I mean, there's so much more football that's ahead of us. So we've played the equivalent of, call it, one college season, actually maybe a little bit more. So between the 3 preseason games and the 10 regular. So we're at 13 games. So for most colleges, that's, you know, 11 games if you have a conference championship, and then you go to the Blue Bonnet Bowl and, you know, play in a bowl game, and then, you know, you get a backpack and a watch and, like, the season's over. But we're in a different situation. So I think, excuse me, what you as a player, and specifically as a rookie, what can you do on a day-to-day basis, week-to-week basis, that you can so that you ensure that you feel as best you can physically? So that's where our sports performance team is involved, and some of the things that you're doing relative to your routine, whether it's your daily prep, relative to your practice prep, how you take care of your body after the game. So there are certain actions that you can take to help mitigate, I would say, the load that you have to go through. So I think the rookies in general, they've had a good attitude. They've had a good work ethic. They've come in after the game, and maybe you don't feel great after the game, but you come in and you get your work in, you get your workout in, and try to get yourself prepared for the following week and the following game. So, and some players play more than others, so each individual has to look at their situation. What am I going to do to maximize my availability? What can I do to get myself prepared? So I'd say, generally speaking, the rookies have had that approach, specific to DP. He's had a good attitude. He works hard. He comes in. He wants to get better. And, you know, we're monitoring everything on a day-to-day basis. So if we feel like we have to pull back somewhere, whether it's Damian or another player in practice, how we practice, what the load is that we put on them in practice, understanding that we're trying to get these players prepared for Sunday so they can optimize their performance and go out there and execute at as high a level as possible.
The other guy that I wanted to ask you about, you know, that's definitely going through some rookie growing pains is Kenyon Green. And, like, what are you seeing out of him compared to maybe other first-round or high-drafted offensive linemen who have had to go up against some of the – like, he's gone up against just the gauntlet of really good defensive linemen.
They're just a little bit better than you were, Seth.
Slightly. Well, I'll tell you, honestly, as a fourth-rounder, I was a lot better than Kenyon Green was as a rookie. So what's Kenyon Green's
touché.
Deal?
I think he's definitely gone through some ups and downs. So even going back to training camp, so anytime you miss a period of time or you miss practice, that's opportunity to work on your technique, work on your fundamentals. So he kind of was a little bit behind the eight ball, got caught up there a little bit. You know, played decent here in the early part of the season, and we're kind of going through a situation where, quite frankly, he hasn't played as well as, you know, he would like. And I think what you've seen is, number one, you're playing against good players. So let's go through the gauntlet over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Like, every team has good players. There's a lot of good inside players. So understanding how teams are attacking you, what can you do? And I think the big thing with him is this is overall technique. So, and I know Coach Warhop and Coach Hunter spent a lot of time on that. So I think sometimes it's taking what we're talking about, what we're asking you to do on the practice field, and then transferring over that to the game. Sometimes that's more seamless than others. So I think, and when you have a strength or a weakness, or teams are seeing you play, then they see a way that they attack you, you have to find a way to self-correct. So you have to self-correct individually. You have to self-correct maybe as a team, and maybe do a little bit something differently schematically. So there are a number of things that you can do to try to improve that situation. So I'd say most players, a lot of players, are going to go through some ups, are going to go through some downs. I think he needs to play better. He understands that. So, again, it goes back to what I said from the beginning. All of us are accountable. We all have a responsibility both individually and to each other, and we all have to be better. And certainly Kenyon understands that. And a lot of this is learning. A lot of this is education. And quite frankly, like, when you play at A&M, it's a good program. But, you know, when you play cupcake in between, you know, playing Alabama and Auburn, like, each week, like, you're playing against a grown-ass man. So whether it's Simmons, whether it's Hargrave, whether it's Rashad Lawrence, like, look, every team, whether it's, you know, Jonathan Allen who and Payne, like, they're one of the best, you know, two of the best interior defensive tackles in the league. That's the NFL. So each week, okay, what can I do better? How can I make some corrections? How can I make the improvements? And until you get that fixed, you're going to continue to get attacked a certain way. So that's part of the process. Like, that's part of learning. That's part of growing. That's part of understanding. It's part of NFL football. And you're not just the biggest, strongest guy that you were in college. And this is the NFL. And each week, each teams have good players. So I would say he's done some decent things, a little bit like Davis. But he's had some other areas where, quite frankly, he hadn't done as well. And until he gets it fixed, then, you know, we're going to continue to see it. But that's just part of the process. Look, the playing period in the NFL is a process. Nobody comes in and is a finished product. Even a player that's a really good player that comes in and has some success early, can he sustain that success over a long period of time? So I would say he certainly needs to be better. He knows that. He understands that. And I think he has enough pride and hopefully has enough mental toughness and physical toughness to try to get things fixed.
I'll be honest with you, too, Nick, if we're talking about those defensive tackles that we've seen, it doesn't seem like that long ago that people were bemoaning how there weren't that many good defensive tackles coming out of the college ranks anymore. And now there's, like, some genuine, like, hybrid studs that can play the run, that can play the pass. Is that just the pendulum swinging now to back to where the it's something you got to adjust for? Like, teams are able to, it seems like they've developed offensive tackles to an extent that, because the edge rushers were the deal, and now interior pass rushers are kind of having their way with teams.
Yeah, you know what? It's an interesting observation, and not to get into like a sort of philosophical schematic discussion, but on the edge of the formation, so you, there's ways that you can maybe mitigate, like if you have a good edge rusher, right? So we're fortunate. We have two pretty good tackles, right? I mean, LT is probably playing as good as any tackle in the league. Titus has done a good job this year. So we're going to see good edge rushers. We're going to see three good edge rushers this week, and Ingram and Jalen Phillips and Chubb. So, all right, do you want to handle the edge? All right, are we good on the edge? Do we need to allocate more resources to the edge? Do we have to put the back over there? Do we have to chip? Do we have to put the tight end over there to provide some presence? So if you allocate resources to the perimeter, maybe you're a little bit lighter on the inside. So maybe you got to shift that back here a little bit and say, all right, we've got to make sure we're firm in the pocket. We're good on a perimeter of formation. And I think when you look at, I would say, trends, so let's just look at league trends and the way teams are playing defensively. And I'd say we've seen it, I don't know, half a dozen times here this year. Going, I would say the Eagles, the Chargers did it, Washington. We're going to see it from Miami. And there's different teams that are doing this. You're starting to see a little bit more of called 3-3 personnel or 5-1 alignment. The Giants did it here a little bit where the three inside guys are covered and try to create as many one-on-ones as possible. So when you have that situation, you got a bunch of one-on-ones, and you maybe don't have as many opportunities for an uncovered player to kind of go one way or the other depending on who the inside player is. So I'd say defense has done a pretty good job of making that adjustment and sort of modification. So you're starting to see a little bit more of this 3-3 personnel. We did it actually even going back however many years ago in New England, where we kind of covered all three guys up, put Chung there in a box. So you have it's a safety in a box, but he's really like a linebacker spot. So, and it's a way for teams to say, all right, this is how we're going to handle the running game, or kind of have put five guys in there, but also being conscious of, you know, 12 personnel in a passing game and how we're going to handle that adjustment. Because I think most teams are, let's call it, this is a nickel league. We've talked about this at different points. I mean, essentially, defenses are nickel personnel. It's 65, 70%. Some teams are a little bit higher. Some teams are a little bit lower that are playing nickel personnel. So how do you deploy the front? What's your front structure? And I think you're seeing a little bit more. So going back to your point there that you made, Seth, when you look at guys on the inside, like there's some pretty good defensive tackles that have come through the ranks here a little bit. So how do you combat that? You got to be firm on the interior, which I think that's why teams are allocating resources maybe a little bit more inside maybe than they have in the past, but you're trying to combat what's going on the other side of the ball. So, I mean, it's cat and mouse game. This is the NFL. There's trends. There's different, I would say, modes of playing, and teams are just trying to stay ahead. And, you know, we're going to see that here this week, the way Miami plays. I mean, they're a nickel team essentially. And they put three big guys on the inside, and then they rotate Ingram, Chubb, and Phillips on the edge there a little bit. So you just got to be able to combat that, and you got to be able to find ways to move the ball within the confines of what teams are doing with that structure.
Nick Caserio, Texans GM, joining us. Nick, you still okay for a few more minutes?
Yeah, you betcha.
Okay, great. I'm counting. So far, it's shots fired at Thanksgiving plates, Seth Payne, and FCS cupcakes. That's what I've got on my list right now.
That's
so
pretty good. Yeah, that's good. Okay. I mean, Seth might have won that, but I gave him a touche back there.
You did. Hey, Nick, since we talked last time, Jack Easterby is no longer with the organization, and I know you've got a long history with Jack, as you've talked about before. Just your thoughts on his departure, and what are the plans to backfill his role?
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, Jack, I mean, I've known Jack a long time. He did a lot of good things for this organization. I have a lot of respect and appreciation, you know, for who he is and what he's done. I think he did a lot of good things to kind of help over the last, you know, three and a half years that he's been here. So, you know, we've had to make just some modifications and adjustment, but, you know, I think we're handling it well. We got a lot of good people in the football operation team and the overall staff, and I think the big thing is just trying to make sure we communicate on a daily basis, make sure everybody has the information that's necessary. Probably taking on a little bit more of those responsibilities. But again, it's all about just making sure that everybody has the information. We're kind of moving in the right direction. So on a week-to-week basis that we can operate and function. But I think it's a credit to a lot of the people that are in this building, a lot of whom were here before I arrived. So, you know, it's unfortunate and it's sad to see Jack go. I mean, known him a long time and, you know, have a personal relationship with him, you know, but we have to figure out a way just kind of reallocate some of the responsibilities. I think it's kind of balancing the short term here in the season. And then after the season, if there's things that we can do on a bigger scale, larger scale, then, you know, we'll go ahead and look at that.
I did, you know, one thing that Easterby had been credited for was creating these sub programs. And it is interesting. You talk about trends in the NFL. When I look at the Texans right now, and there's a, you know, there's a director of team wellness, there's a director of Texans health, there's a director of applied sports science, there's a director of team development. A director of movement and return to performance. Like, this feels like a much more, I guess, scientifically and data-driven organization than it was when I was a player. Is this in line with about what most teams are doing, or do you guys feel like you're doing more than a lot of other teams?
Yeah, I haven't studied exactly all organizational structures, Seth, but I think what teams are doing, they're allocating more, I would say, resources in certain areas that maybe, let's call it, you know, 6 to 8 years ago, there really wasn't as much discussion or emphasis. And I think the idea and the design behind that is to, number one, it's to service and help the players, and number two, provide them information and provide data and information that you might be able to utilize on a number of different levels. How you apply that, what the information says, and then the articulation of it and then the application of it, that's the most important thing. So I would say organizationally, football, I'd say, is kind of moving more towards this direction. I would say basketball and baseball are probably further along in some of these areas. So the whole idea is to create a support system really for the players. So you have coaching and playing, which is important. You have sports performance, which is important. You have player development, which is important. You have nutrition, that's important. And you're really trying to, what you're doing is really trying to develop the player as holistically as possible and provide him the resources that he needs when he's in the building. So when he walks in the building, he understands everything that I need to help make me a better player and a better person is here. Ultimately, what matters is how you play on the field. So in the end, that's what anybody gives a crap about. So start through that lens. And then, okay, along those lines, what can we do to help aid in that process, to help simplify so that they can focus on being as good of a football player as possible? So I would say just some of the things that I would say we notice or I notice is we've been able to make gains with some of our players in terms of their strength and their overall development during the season. And that's the emphasis on lifting during the season. And then everybody says, well, you know, during the season, you just got to focus on playing football and getting ready and doing those types of things. Well, not necessarily. Like, you can actually make strides. You can actually make progress. You can improve your lower body strength. Not so much about your upper body strength, but improving your lower body strength is a ground-based game. Everything starts from the ground up. So we train accordingly. So what can we do to help a player get prepared, get his body prepared? There's pre-practice prep. He can spend time with an individual and get stretched or work on, if he has an issue, maybe with a hamstring or some lower body extremity. There's things and tools that we have available to us, and our job is to educate the players about what's available to them. So I'd say this is an area where the league is probably moving towards and growing, and the teams that are able to utilize the information and data to their advantage, it's going to hopefully help them from an overall big picture perspective and try to have some sustained success.
Nick Caserio joining us on the program. Hey, Nick, the waiver wire pickup process, you made a couple pickups. You know, Benjamin, Amari Rodgers were two of your pickups. I know they were inactive this past week. But I would be horrible because I'd be picking up every player right now that gets put out there because you're where you're picking right now.
Are you playing fantasy football?
Always, always, yes. And I'm terrible at it. Are you looking?
Hopefully you didn't lose money like with these DraftKings people that like lost money or they had their accounts hacked or whatever.
Oh, no. I'm good with my passwords. I'm just terrible at player evaluation.
All right.
Yeah. But do you where you guys are
Seth's
right
better
now?
Better at player evaluation.
Do you look at the waiver pickup process is almost like a supplemental draft for you guys at this point?
It's another opportunity there. And to your point, every player, it's not that you're looking at every player, but you're going through and each day if there's names that pop up on the waiver wire, you have to go back. And this is where the information that you've accumulated over time you can use to your benefit. So as an example, so Rodgers is a player that, you know, was drafted, you know, a couple of years ago. So he's fairly new to the NFL. So there's a lot of work that was done on him prior to the pre-draft prep. So the work that our college scouts do, the amount of time, the amount of information that they gather, that goes into our centralized database. So we have that information. And then once they're on a team, okay, then it kind of transfers over into pro scouting and then kind of look at their information in pro. But if you want to drill down and say, all right, what do we say about this guy? What do we think? What are his football characteristics? What are his character? What's his background? What do we say in terms of the bottom line evaluation on the player? That's where you kind of have that information. You can utilize it to your advantage. So not every player is going to – it's not necessarily need-based. Well, we need said player or said position. Well, this guy's on the waiver wire. All right, let's go ahead and claim him. All right, well, there's a thought process that goes into it. So I would say in those two particular cases, younger players – had some degree of success, whether it was coming out of college, maybe at different points in the NFL. Maybe they didn't get as many opportunities as they did in their respective teams. So it's a chance for us to, I'd say, to evaluate those players. Anytime you bring a player on to the team late in the year, it's not as they have a lot of catching up to do, so you understand that. So bring a player in, make sure that we understand what the expectation is, articulate that to the player, come in, try to get him prepared to play. And then once we feel that he's in a position where he could potentially help our team, we'll give him an opportunity. It's not like, well, we need to claim a player, we're going to automatically play him like that following Sunday. It doesn't work that way. So between the waiver wire claims, between signing players off a practice squad as needed, between adding the players to their practice squad, and I would say adding players to the practice squad, that's probably one area that's maybe a little bit more need-based. So if you lose a player, you have a position and maybe you're trying to backfill or supplement there a little bit, okay, that's an easier way to do it because those guys kind of are easier to take on and off the roster. Waiver claims are a little bit different because a lot of times if a player gets waived, he's either going to get claimed. I'd say a couple of these guys were multiple claims that were put on Benjamin and Rodgers, or if they make it through waivers, there's a good chance they're going to go back to their practice squad unless they're looking for another opportunity and they're moving on. So you try to take all that information, try to take that calculus and then say, all right, does this make sense for us? Where are we as a team? And if we feel like it's worth doing, then we'll go ahead and consider it. And that's after consultation and discussion with Lovie. And then on the scouting side, having discussion, you know, whether it's the pro department, the college department, whoever is relevant, but try to utilize all the information, all the resources that we have and try to make, you know, a good decision. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer,
okay.
But to kind of get to an end point. But that's kind of how that process works.
Nick Caserio joining us. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. Last thing before we get you out, Nick. I mean, you mentioned it. It's a league where a lot of these games are close games this year. You guys have been in a lot of close games. I guess just to summarize, like, how close do you feel like this team is right now to being in that pool of teams where it's a play here and a play there kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of work in front of us. So I think in the end, we just have to be able to execute in critical situations and start with when you just kind of look at our team. So we've kind of regressed here a little bit in the old turnover margin. I think we were 6th, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. Now we're, you know, in the 21st or 22nd. So that's a couple of different things. It means we're kind of giving the ball away offensively and we're not taking it away defensively. So that's an important stat. So, you know, defensively, we've actually played decent in a red area at different points. We've been able to get some stops down there. We've got to do a better job, you know, with run defense and offensively. We just got to be better on third down, which is going back to early down. So, you know, we have a lot of work in front of us, and we're certainly capable. We put ourselves in a position at different points, but in the end, we've come up short. So, like, there's no points for finishing second place. I mean, you know, close counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, not in NFL football. So, in the end, our ability to execute in critical situations in the fourth quarter, that's going to determine whether or not we're going to be able to get over the hump and, you know, be on the other side of the ledger here, wins and losses. So I'd say we're making progress. You know, the attitude's been good. Work ethic's been good. I'd say the execution needs to be better. And then just we just all need to do a better job, I'd say, collectively. Myself, coaches, players, everybody can do a little bit more. We can all do a little bit better. So I think if we're committed to doing that and we kind of can incrementally make a little bit of progress here, then hopefully we'll see a better end result.
Nick, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we are very thankful that you spent some time with us. We appreciate it very much.
And eat whatever you want with no shame.
Yes.
or as little as you want with no shame.
No, I appreciate your guys' time. Happy Thanksgiving. A lot to be thankful for. I think when we take a step back, kind of put everything in perspective here. I mean, Thanksgiving's a good opportunity for all of us to realize there's more than football, to enjoy the company of our loved ones and, you know, tell people how much we love them, how much we care about them, how thankful we are for them, how much we appreciate them. Because in the end, that's going to matter more than kind of what goes on in the football field. So, everybody, you guys have a great day. Have a great Thanksgiving. You know, look forward to connecting here at some point.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. Good stuff. Nick Caserio, Texans general manager, on a variety of topics right there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details.
Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.